You're listening to a download from the outdoorstation.co.uk.
Number 3, 6, 5.
Hello and welcome back to the Outdoor Station and to my world of broken promises. Yes, as I finished the last podcast, number 364, casually stating that I'd be trying to launch either a new audio or video podcast each week, nothing has happened. It's gone quiet. So what has been happening during these last 3 weeks of radio silence? Well, firstly, I decided that it was about time to complete my review of the 2013 TGO Challenge Crossing. Now, it's November as I record this, and obviously the event takes place in May of each year. And this year I went with Lee and Tony, and I can honestly say that it wasn't a very good crossing for me at all. There were numerous reasons. The two main ones were basically, firstly, that I just wasn't fit enough. I hadn't done any training out on the hills or been in the gym or whatever, got myself up to a decent level. And the second, that my headspace wasn't really particularly good. I was right in the middle of too much commercial activity, preparing the unit before we moved into it. So literally, I just grabbed my bag, threw some stuff into it, which I knew worked quite well for me in the past, and headed out to meet them. The bottom line is that really, for the first time in 7 years, I didn't really enjoy it. And I was, you know, naturally a bit embarrassed about the whole thing and obviously sharing that particular information. So, as you can understand, I wasn't very keen to return to the memory in some respects, which is unusual after achieving, another crossing. However, I do know from experience that people that share their experience and information from a bad trip is just as useful as sharing a colourful, beautiful story of sunny, glorious, warm trips. So I decided maybe it was time to set up the studio and show people the videos that I had taken, along with animating some of the maps and route information and a little bit of background information, putting it all together in two programs. Well, it took me 2 weeks of editing in the evenings to put the clips together and combine all the information. It's surprising just how much information is involved in creating all the titles and giving a good presentation. But the final result is two programs, each one about an hour long, which, to be fair, I'm quite pleased with. They're not too bad. The downside of this is purely a technical one, because they're an hour long and at 720p, which is sort of high definition. The files are 10 gigs in size, and my connection here just told me that each one will take over 24 hours to upload to YouTube. So naturally, that's a little bit of a pain. However, I've got a friend just down the road who's a bit closer than me to the fibre spout, and he is currently uploading them for me on his machine. So by the time this audio podcast goes live, there should be two long video programs to watch. Programs to watch on your smart TV or your iPad or whatever, looking at the experience from the TGO Challenge 2013. So I hope you enjoy those. Now, you know, this obviously links into the fact that technology is great, but sometimes I just think that people don't fully understand some of the time issues, the technical hurdles, and the financial investment we all have to go through in our never-ending quest to improve quality and entertainment value, I suppose. You know, it comes down to several things. A, to record something of a decent quality in a way that isn't amateurish. B, to edit it into an entertaining format. And C, the final hurdle, of course, is to upload it to YouTube or wherever you want to present it as free entertainment. As I say, part of my ongoing research into the technical aspects and trying to increase my knowledge base as well as the output quality for people to enjoy and hopefully share more interest and passion to outdoor-based activities I watch some other guys doing something similar from studiotech.tv. Now, their specific interest, whereas mine is more the outdoors world, is actually in relating to people doing what I'm doing, live streaming and home studio development. In other words, producing TV quality material based in a much smaller environment on a much tighter budget. Anyway, the guys from TTFN.tv wanted to come and interview me discussing the podcasts I've done in the past and obviously the development I'm doing in bringing you more video and more content. And so they came over to see me. And there is a video now live on the outdoorstation.co.uk or on the TTFN.tv website. Where you can see more about my plans for world domination when it comes to outdoor video content. But if you're interested in, live streaming and all the various geeky things involved in that type of hobby, then there's plenty more on their website and lots of videos. They're certainly concentrating on that subject matter, so you might find that of interest.
Since 2005, over 5 million people have listened to the Outdoors Station audio podcasts, and over 1 million have watched the videos. You can subscribe to the Outdoors Station in numerous ways. Visit the website and select the link to your chosen social media network.
So that's video, but let's now get back to the world of audio and let you know who we're actually chatting to today in this podcast. Now, I mentioned in the previous podcast my last trip to the outdoors trade show in Coventry, which was in September. And in this particular program, we have a chat with Tim, the guy behind the Aquaforno. A bit of a mouthful, but hopefully it'll all become clear when you listen to it more. I would describe it as probably the ultimate outdoor cooking solution for all the family. It's certainly more glamping than lightweight backpacking, but it does appear to give you every cooking solution for eating in fine style al fresco, and certainly it'll make all your friends jealous. It's a barbecue on steroids, but a lot of clever design ideas behind it. So I hope you'll enjoy that. And again, there's some pictures on the Outdoor Station website as well to have a look at to give you more of an idea, and links to the product, of course. Now, we also meet up with John Owens from Ardblair Sports Importers. They're obviously a trade supplier. They import products such as Leckie and Aku and so on. So quality brands. And they're now bringing in a series of fairly lightweight, I describe them probably as designer packs for 2014 from an American company called Boreas Gear. Now, listeners, regular listeners may recognise that name, as I met Tay Kim from Boreas Gear at Friedrichshafen in 2012, and we did an interview with them because I was equally impressed with the styling as well as the functionality of the products that they were showing at the show. So I think they're going to raise a few eyebrows for people who, like me, like to look good on the hills. There's some very, very cool products coming through. And so we do our best to explain those in a little bit more detail. But first, let's talk about those nasty little critters, ticks. Oh, yes, don't we just love them? The scourge of outdoors people everywhere. Now, I've had my fair share of them, and Rose certainly has. The fear, of course, when you get chewed on by a tick is whether they're carrying Lyme's disease. And CarePlus is the only company that I'm aware of that actually offer a portable kit to detect if a tick which has bitten you was actually carrying Lyme's disease. Now, the kit came out, I believe, again, July of last year. And Julian Keeble from Keeble Agencies are the UK distributors of CarePlus products.
Yeah, it's been very interesting. There was some resistance, surprisingly, from the medical profession, who wanted to get more and more and more information about the accuracy of the testing. The argument is that it's 96% accurate, and considering that Lyme disease is on the increase, any help that we can give the medical profession in diagnosis has got to be a positive thing, and at last they're beginning to recognise that.
Absolutely. Good. And so what's the actual principle of the test then, and how do you actually, does a user, if they're concerned about, they've got a tick obviously on their hand or leg or wherever it might be, what's the process they go through?
Okay, if you're worried about a tick, and that normally means that you can see that the tick has already been feeding because it's starting to swell up, remove the tick carefully using a tick removing tool. There are several on the market.
Yeah, you've got one, haven't you?
That's right. We've got our tick remover.
Yeah,
there are several other ones, but use a proper tick remover so you're ensure that you get the whole of the tick out, including the head and the pincers. And then you can exact your revenge on the tick, because you place the tick in the test tube that's provided. You put a little bit of the solution which is provided into the test tube. You mash the tick up with the masher which is provided. And then when you made a solution of it, you just draw a little of it up in a pipette which is provided and place it onto the test card. It's a little bit like a pregnancy test kit. You just drop it on. There are two lines. You hope that only one comes up that says that the tick test has been completed successfully. But if the other line comes up, it says it's been tested successfully, but the tick is carrying Lyme's disease.
Right.
But let me just stress, it's the tick that's carrying Lyme's disease. It's not a test to say you have got Lyme's disease. So
well,
now you go to the doctors.
Yeah. Well, ticks are great conversations when you're on the hills, and certainly when you're in the hills in Scotland, and everybody's got different solutions on how to remove a tick. And one of the worst ones, although it's effective, is obviously smothering the tick in Vaseline or using a cigarette butt when it's still lit to burn the area and get the tick. Yeah. Well, it makes the tick regurgitate its
absolutely
this stomach is contents.
Yeah,
it?
This is the problem. You're actually putting the tick under pressure. Mm. And so, as you say, it regurgitates. So then it could be actually passing the disease on to you by doing it that way. So that's why we recommend drawing the tick out carefully and completely.
Yeah. Well, I certainly had one experience with it when I was in Scotland with Rose, and she picked up the nickname of Ticky Rose because I took 23 ticks out of her one night.
Well, it's interesting that you should say that, because although it's a once-only-use test, if you have more than one tick on you, you can test more than one tick at a time. You could, those 26 ticks could be tested. And if the test tube isn't big enough, then you just use something else. It doesn't it doesn't have to be that. But yeah, you could test all of those, because we are looking for an offending tick.
Yeah.
So if one of the 12 or one of the 26 is carrying it, we need to know that, and then the doctor will do the rest. He'll start prescribing.
Give him more of a positive action rather than just waiting to see if the little ring appears.
Absolutely.
I presume then, I've not looked inside the box, but I presume it's glass inside there, is it?
Plastic.
It's plastic. Everything, so it's okay to carry.
Oh, absolutely.
Lovely, okay. Well, you've got a variety of things here which are obviously being introduced, now going into 2014, and a couple of items we've spoken about. So let's have a look at these over here. Tell me a bit about these.
Okay, this is a new product. It was introduced this year, really aimed at the traveller, but not necessarily the international traveller, but this is someone going off for the weekend in the car with the kids. So they've just got a little pack, they can put it into a handbag, into the pocket, and it covers all the eventualities that might happen on a day out or a weekend. So we've got a natural insect spray, so if you're out and suddenly you see that there's a lot of insects around, you can use that in an 8 mil pump spray, so it's ecological as well as giving you some protection. If however you find that you've been bitten, we'd have a bite relief spray. There's also sun protection, SPF 30, so it's quite a strong sun protection. Even if you only want to put some on your face or something, just to cover that. There's also a clean body spray. This is a product which is we have bigger versions of all of those, but the clean body spray is really great if you've been on a long journey, particularly flying, which is exhausting, and you're feeling washed out. You can just spray your face and hands, and it just cools you down, it refreshes you. It's got quite a nice smell as well, so it's
not like a hand cleaning gel.
No.
cleansing gel? It's
no, it's not. It is actually a spray.
Okay, well, two questions. First of all, I mean, these are about just a little bit bigger than a lipstick stick or whatever they're called.
Yeah, 8 mil there.
Pump action. So are they safe for flying?
Yeah, absolutely. They're because they are a pump action and the size of them, yeah, they're perfectly safe to fly and contained in a nice little case. They're absolutely perfect. I mean, probably you'd show them as you go through.
They'd probably pick them up these days.
Probably pick them up. Yeah, exactly.
And the second question is safe for children?
Yes, everything is safe for children in this one. That's why the natural spray was selected, because that's particularly one which we recommend for children. So, yes, perfect. If, however, you felt that you wanted something a bit stronger, then there is this same type of range, but using a 40% DEET spray. You could replace the natural with a DEET if you wanted to do that.
Right, okay. So, obviously, as an extension of this, there's a neat little pack of four, which is, what sort of price are we talking about?
$9.99 recommended.
Very affordable then. Yeah. Very affordable just to have in the car or in the backpack. But you also sell them individually. So
yes,
if somebody wanted to get two or three tubes of the sun SPF protection, then obviously they can just buy those extra. And the individual ones?
Yeah, the recommended retail is $2.49.
Yeah, okay, so just right really for the family visit, isn't it?
Yeah.
And the final item then, this is something I've seen for the first time on the Care Plus range. Would you like to just explain that to people?
Yeah, sure.
And the type of people you think this is you're going to use this?
Yeah, sure. Well, I think we've all experienced the first sandal of the season syndrome when us men throw our socks off and put sandals on, being fashion conscious, and then suddenly
no socks,
and then suddenly within a half an hour you've rubbed a sore piece up on your toe where the sandal goes over. So this product is designed to relieve that. By putting it on, it forms a nice non-greasy film on the skin, so actually you don't have this build up of friction, so it should protect you from that. Also, it helps prevent blisters and so on, so you can, if you are prone to blistering a little bit, you can put some on your heel or toes just to stop that that blistering effect.
Sure. Okay, so and what's actually called then? What do you call it?
We're just calling it foot protector. Simple as that.
I presume you know, ladies with their shoes?
Absolutely. Yes,
men, guys with boots?
Yeah, exactly.
What about chafing from something like cycle shorts and, you know, the saddle and that sort of, is it good for the nether regions? Any reason why not, Ron?
No, I was going to say, there's probably no reason, because, I mean, your feet are quite sensitive, and I would say sort of thighs and so on. No, I don't think there'd be any reason why it wouldn't work, although it's not. It is a foot protector, so we're not actually saying it would work for that, but I think there's no reason why it wouldn't work. I think it'd be quite good. As you can see, it's just a nice little screw tube, so you a little bit like a lipstick type of thing.
Roll-on stick, sort of.
Yeah, roll-on stick, exactly. Yeah, in a 15-gram pack.
Okay, so again, small enough to stash away, not going to give you too
pocket
much
pocket size handbag size.
Exactly, too much issue to carry about.
Yep,
lovely. Thank you.
Okay,
you're listening to the Outdoor Station, bringing you news, ideas, and information about products, people, and places.
Of course, links to all the products mentioned will be on the outdoorstation.co.uk website if you want more information, as well as, of course, as the link to the Care Plus website for medical backup information as well. Okay, so now let's move on to Boreas gear. And if you want to see more pictures and listen to my previous interview with them back in 2012, if you go to the Outdoor Station website, look up podcast number 349. However, at the Coventry show, it was John Owens from Ardblair Sports Importers, who I actually spoke to, who took us through some of the packs which will be available in spring 2014 in the UK.
Ardblair are taking on a new range of products from the States. Boreas, who we've spoken to before a couple of years ago at Friedrichshafen, but they're now obviously entering the UK market with a very bright and colourful display of rucksacks.
Yes, no, we're very excited to take them on, because Boreas are very different to a lot of brands on the market, because the guys who run the brands are designers. You know, they're guys who have worked for the big brands in the past, but fed up with designing things they didn't really want to design. So they've been allowed to sort of do what they want to do. And, you know, it shows in very distinctive looking packs, very clean, very unique looking, but with all the features packed in that all the user experience they've got sort of has given them.
What I do like about them is the way they've used colour as well as material to present the product. What's the response been like at this trade show?
Excellent. I mean, you know, it's they've sort of people have been walking past and just been drawn in by the general look and appearance of them. It's been an interesting reaction. Some people have seen them as a bit quirky because they're so different to every other brand of pack on the market. But most people have mentioned the word design. Mm. When they've been discussing them, I mean, that has cropped up again and again to the extent that one of the bigger buyers from the outdoor trade said it's a perfect bag for the Saab buyer.
For the Saab buyer?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
You know, because obviously Saab buyers are
right.
Stereotypically meant to be all architects. So, you know, that...
Yeah, nice one. Well, yeah, you see the range, you can agree with that comment. Well, let's actually look at the Boreas gear then, the more technical things now, the rucksacks, as we say, for the Saab driver. Let's cherry pick two or three items here. So let's start with something that's a sort of a general all-round larger rucksack and work down a bit.
Yeah, well, let's start with the Lost Coast. For the UK market, this is probably something that's most understandable. It's a traditional lid closure backpacking rucksack series. Comes in a couple of different capacity sizes and different back lengths. So, clean looking on the front, but actually if you start breaking down the front, you actually see there's a lot of features hidden away.
I think that's probably what we could say is a generalisation about the Boreas design philosophy, isn't it? Everything is very tucked away, which looks clean at first glance, and then it starts to reveal itself as you start to explore the product.
I mean, for a classic backpacking rucksack, at the front, you notice there's a little sleeve almost that covers the entrance to a nice big stretch pocket on the front. But while we look at the stretch pocket, you see a signature design of Boreas. They put laminated strips across the stretch material to stop it losing its shape. So when you've got it loaded, it's not going to sort of the load's not going to move away from you. It's going to keep it tight and compressed and not have too much movement.
And is that a breathable mesh?
Good question. That one, I don't actually know the answer.
It looks like it should be actually. If you've got wet gear in there,
it's not coated on the back of it anyway.
No.
Because you've got coating on the main body on the inside.
Sure.
And then tucked along the sides.
Can I just mention again that pocket sounds so simple, just to say a large mesh front pocket. But in actual fact, although the entrance to the pocket is possibly almost a third down from the top of the pack, the pocket actually is the full length of the pack because there's an upper part to the pocket as well as the natural lower part to the pocket as well as being the full width. So in itself, I've not seen a pocket which is the full length of a pack or the full height of a pack rather.
No, so if you've got longer items and you want to make sure they're not going to fall out or whatever, should you have a tumble or whatever, you can pull the top right over Nothing's going to come out. And again, part of their look is when you've got things in there, it's not going to look like you've got something dangling on the outside of your pack. And then, say, running up the length of the pack either side of that, you've got hidden daisy chains. You know, Boreas are kind of obsessed with daisy chains, and you'll find them throughout the whole range, but they're just neatly tucked away, which you want to clip, adapt them, anything... they're there to do that job.
Excellent. Okay. So let's take us for more of a tour around the pack. Then what are the side pockets?
We're moving around to the side. You've got your classic stretch side pocket. You know, quite a wide one on this pack. So, you know, it'll easily get your bigger sort of water bottles in, even lightweight fly sheets, anything like that.
Well, you get a rolled up sleeping mat in there quite easily.
Yeah, a modern mat easily. You've got the ability again, like a lot of bags these days, to go over the top of the pocket, or you can thread through with the compression strap through the pocket and out the other side. Versatility there.
I would say about this pocket, it is angled with the styling of the pack, that it's angled upwards towards the user as opposed to downwards, so you can reach back into it. However, there is an access at the bottom of the pocket, which is quite clever, which is big enough to get your hand in to reach an apple or a windshield or something.
Oh, definitely. I mean, again, depending how you have the strap there, you could just have something tucked away and just literally pull around and whip out a windshield exactly as you say.
Or rolled up map. Even. You could get the map in there. Sorry, do carry on. I'm getting excited about this pack. I do like them. I think they're lovely.
Well, that's the thing. You keep looking at it, and because it looks so simple, you keep pointing and finding little new things. So we go around to the main suspensions part of the bag, the back system, and the first thing you notice is, yes, it looks like a sort of 3D EVA cut with channels running through it with like a nice mesh over the top of it, but what's interesting is it's actually cut through the core of it as well. So basically it's hollow with multiple channels running out on the top of it. Now, this means when you're moving and flexing, air... will always be moving around. It can't be trapped in somewhere. You're going to be forcing air in and out of somewhere. So it's going to act like a bellows effect. So you're always going to be, you know, cool, dry air moving in and out. So hopefully give you a nice dry back, but it's still a close back contact system.
Yeah, see that? Yeah.
Down, exactly the same sort of material down on the sort of hip area. Not massively stiff and rigid. So if you like your back's deep but not too rigid, this is great. But still large enough to sort of support the load you're going to carry, and nice big hip pockets, you know. Easy access to trail
very generous hip pockets.
So that's a lovely feature, you know. And again, with an ergo pull system, so again you can really get the load cranked in. But really nice that some brands sort of miss out on this easy feature, is just having a quick release pull to release, and that's something that
Let me try and describe that to add to the description then. So you tighten the hip belt by pulling the straps inwards towards the centre of your body, which has become a sort of more of a newer packs style. There's a lot of packs doing that these days. But to actually do a quick release, you have to normally fiddle with it to release the pressure or undo the buckle. Whereas in this particular case, they've got two thumb loops attached to the hip belt by the pockets, which are just as you've just heard him in the background. Just quickly put your thumb in there and pull it apart. Very simple, very very simple, incredibly effective, and in a hurry, that's what you need.
I think we'll carry on talking about the back system. We'll have to go inside to carry on talking about the back system. Okay. That's all right. So inside, you've got a normal sort of draw cord collar, but then inside, if we look at the back, you've got a little hanger for a hydration system, and then like a lot of bags, there's a little zip entrance to get at the suspension system inside. Now, usually that it's usually just to play about with adjusting the frame angle or something like that. Here, you can very easily open that up. There's a handle inside which you can pull, and the back sheet and the strut suspension of that comes out in one go. And that'll save about 200 grams of weight. So suddenly you can change what is, you know, a lightweight, but you know, not the lightest weight pack, which carries big load comfortably, into a pack that, if you really want to cut the weight down, or you're not carrying such a bigger weight, and you want a more comfortable, sort of malleable feel for lighter loads, straight away, very quickly done.
So we've still got the same foam back system there, the breathing foam back system, and now we have a large zipper pocket, which in actual fact you could tuck your sleeping mat down into if you had an inflatable sleeping mat, and it's actually tucked out of the way and safe, and leaving you with a very light pack. What, about a kilo-ish, something like that?
It's just opening on the capacity size.
What size is this pack?
This is the 60 litre.
Okay, that's very respectable.
Yeah.
Is there any others in the Boris range that's attracting a lot of interest at the moment?
Well, I mean, where we've had interest and some orders already have been on the sort of the sister pack, the Buttermilks, which is very much like the Lost Coast, but with a roll-top closure, keeping that sort of simplicity and weight down. All the same features we've mentioned already, the back system, the cleanness of the pack and the versatility, but just in different back lengths and slightly different capacities, you know, 40 and 55 litres.
And to be honest, that one really stands off the stand. I don't know why it really jumps off at you, but it's, I don't know whether it's the colour scheme or whatever, but the styling and the colour scheme, the blue, the silver, the yellow, it's a very attractive looking pack, isn't it?
Oh, totally. And, you know, I think blue, vivid blues always work well. But again, just as you say, little bits of detail popping out to give a little bit of colour pop.
Yeah. Very, I can see that being popular.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's uniqueness, and that's what these guys are about. And, you know, we're at a relatively young company. They've only been going to in 2010, but this is just a flavour of what's going to come from these guys.
Podcasts to inform, inspire, and entertain lovers of the great outdoors everywhere.
Seriously though, check out the Boreas Gear website generally. Some very, very cool stuff, both in design and functionality on their site. And links, once again, of course, will be on the Outdoor Station website. Finally, it's time to release the outdoor chef in you. The Aquaforno has to be the ultimate outdoor cooking machine using organic matter. It's got to be ideal for families, bushcrafters and social people, really, everywhere in the outdoors who enjoy fine food, as Tim from Aquaforno explains.
Well, the Out Forno was designed really as a telescopic pizza oven. It's got an integral kettle. It'll boil a litre of water every 6 or 7 minutes and allow you to cook almost anything.
It's a lovely, stylish piece of equipment. Is it British made? That's the first thing.
It's British designed. All the original units were British made, but we're having to move production to the Far East now just to be able to cater for volume.
Right, and economics, I presume, as well.
And economics, absolutely, yeah.
So describe it to us. It looks like a telescopic barbecue oven, really, that goes up and down. It in its crudest description, but I'm sure you can refine that for me.
Well, I think you've probably hit the nail on the head. It is designed to be telescopic. It's three cylinders which fit over each other. So when it's packed, it's only 330 mil high, or 30 centimetres a foot high, and 43 centimetres wide. So it packs really quite small, but it stands over a metre and allows you to simultaneously bake, grill and boil.
So the bottom section is the firebox section. That's where all the heat obviously comes from. But it's on three legs. It's on a tripod, which I notice is adjustable, so it presumably takes into account varying terrain.
Yep.
Then you have the middle section, which slides up, and I presume that's obviously the middle of the oven. Then you've got the top, which has got like a pizza hard surface there to it looks like you can cook straight onto that.
Yep.
Then you have the lid and then the chimney. So in its entire height, when it's standing like this, how tall is it now?
That's a metre high. Obviously, would be 43 centimetres wide. As you can see it at the moment, it's got the racks on, which allow you to dry clothes, hang utensils when you're cooking, which does make it that fair bit wider. But they're designed to be removable, and they're even designed to fail. Should a toddler come running along and run into them, they'll snap off rather than knock the whole unit over.
You've got a water system. I see there's a tap on the side there as well. Explain that to me.
There's an integral boiler. It's designed to sit around the fire, which means regardless of what the level of wind and bad weather is, you can get reliable boiling water every 6 or 7 minutes, as much as a litre at a time.
Okay, and how do you actually refill that water if you've got the whole system running, as it were?
There's a small spout on the side, and on the opposite side is the tap, so you've got a complete through flow of water, which you can refill at any point.
Okay, so who do you visualise that your customers for this sort of product? I mean, I can visualise a few people that I know would love it. It's certainly not a lightweight product. I mean, what's the weight we're talking about?
It weighs around 19 kilos. It's really hard to define a target market. We find that we sell just as many units to people who are into the equestrian lifestyle as we do allotment holders, family campers, festival goers. Really anybody that spends a lot of time outside can gain a lot of enjoyment and enhanced lifestyle from having an aquaforno with them.
And I can totally see that straight away. It's definitely it's a base camp type unit. If you've set up camp somewhere and you want to have all your facilities, it also must be in the evening when you just sort of leave it going. A lovely little chiminera, almost, just a little heater, social centre to the camping.
Absolutely. When the units fill up, it radiates a huge amount of heat like any normal chiminea. If you just sitting around a fire for the aesthetics, you can just twist the top two sections off, so you can just sit around an open fire. It's completely up to you.
Oh, so the whole thing comes apart then? It's not actually sort of a fixed three-tier unit?
No, you can use each section independently, so you can just use it as a fire pit or as a barbecue, with or without the kettle. The next layer up can be added, and you can use that for frying on, so adding a paella dish or a big frying pan. And then on top of that, you can put the full height together and use the top oven as well.
Well, obviously, you've been demonstrating this since you've created it. What's your favourite meal that you've conducted with it?
I think our pièce de résistance was slow-cooked leg and shoulder of lamb with potato gratin, with vegetables, and then cream brioche and brandy pudding with coffee, all of which was done in a field in Cornwall.
Now, if that doesn't sell it, nothing will. But moving further on, you've just mentioned you've got plans actually for others in the range, slightly smaller and looking towards the intent market.
Yeah, we're aware that there is a sort of need for stoves to develop beyond the standard just heat only option for inside tents.
Most of the options on the market would allow you to be able to boil a kettle at best, and apart from that, it just supplies heat. Whilst we aren't the sort of people that feel that you should be taking a television when you go camping, and we don't want to take the nature out of the experience, cooking over fire in different forms is completely natural and has been for thousands of years, so it would be nice to be able to enhance that. And having the pizza stone in there is actually akin to so many different ethnic diets around the world, where people eat different types of flatbreads, be it naan breads, tortillas and things. So why not let people do that in a more simple fashion?
Okay, so to give people an idea then, just give me an idea of sort of the retail price of this, and then how the sizes and approximate prices of these future items might be.
We're planning four sizes in the range: a Massimo Forno, which is a 700mm diameter unit, which is largely for very big groups, something that we'd actually anticipated largely for the US market. The standard unit's the Aqua Forno, then we go down to a smaller one, Piccolo Forno, and planned in the range in the future is the Bambino Forno, which will just be, so that's 7 inches or 180 millimetres wide, and ideal for one person to take backpacking.
Right, so that's backpacking, bushcrafting, fishermen, that type of marketplace.
Yeah.
And price point on all these sort of things?
Aqua Forno retails at £350.
That's this one here.
That's the standard size unit. The Piccolo Forno will retail at £275. We're not quite sure about prices for the other size units at the moment. We're just concentrating on allowing people to get
still
to
in development, I trust.
Absolutely, yeah.
Brilliant. Lovely. Well, thanks very much for your time. The only other question was, you were at Friedrichshafen, the big European trade show. What was the response like there? Because obviously that's open to a massive market of visitors.
We were surprised at how many people were interested, especially in terms of distribution. The problem for us is, being a fairly small company, we just don't have the margins to be able to cater for all those distributors at the moment. But obviously, we're hoping to be able to go out to our customer base through small independent retailers that we can speak to ourselves, and obviously direct from our own website.
And were there many countries that were more sort of interested than others, a lot of interest?
There was really healthy interest across Europe. Probably the most surprising for us, but that's just because of our lack of understanding of world markets, was the interest from South Korea, where there were 5 separate companies interested in being the distributors for South Korea. It's certainly something that we weren't aware of ourselves. It does have a huge outdoor market, and it's something that apparently has been promoted by the government, helping people take time off as long as they spend it outside. And I've heard rumours that you can even spend up to an hour waiting to start one of the outdoor walking trails.
Well, there's another outdoor market then that we're all unaware of. Well, thanks very much for your time, and I wish you all the best with the product.
Brilliant. Bob, nice to speak to you.
My thanks to all my guests in this podcast, and links to all the items discussed here will be available over on the Outdoor Station website, of course, plus a few photographs. Do let me have some feedback on the audio and video content you've been listening to and watching, if you would. info@theoutdoorstation.co.uk. We now have almost 3,000 YouTube subscribers, and also obviously millions of downloads for the audio podcasts. But links to our various social media networks is always a good way of tapping into whatever has just been released, if you don't use the RSS feed. And it's a good way to keep in touch, of course. Anyway, I shall hopefully keep my fingers crossed that the video has now been uploaded by the time I finish editing this one and releasing it. So, all being well, you can have a listen to this. And then when you get time, if you want to see what the experience was in May 2013 on the TGO Challenge, that will be available over on the Outdoor Station and, of course, on YouTube as well. Until next time, folks, bye for now.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To hear or see more from our extensive free library, please visit theoutdoorstation.co.uk.